This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind Archives.
Our first speaker today gave us evidence that he has been attending here 31 years. Now, he was a little baby when he started. He is a fine teacher, and he is a member of the Board of Directors, Chairman of the Board of Education, and past President of Religious Science International. At the present time, he is the minister of a fast, large, growing church, the Chicago Church of Religious Science. His topic this morning is the voice of authority. Let's welcome Dr. Carlton Whitehead to the platform.
Good morning. Yes, I was very young when I first started this. Well, a little more about my youth later on. Are you enjoying yourselves? You sounded almost convinced. I asked you, are you enjoying yourselves? That's better. We're all familiar with the voice of authority. We hear it on radio and television all of the time. Aspiditis is the painkiller that most doctors recommend. When E.F. Hutton speaks, and science has demonstrated conclusively that Kickapoo juice has more vitamins than X brand. And the latest statistics show that people who live in high-rise apartments use the elevators more than those who live in a single-level dwelling. Exhaustive tests show that Uncle Ben's can opener lasts longer, particularly for those families who buy in plastic containers. And everyone knows that Burl's baggies are the best. And Pearl's perfume is the sexiest. Now, we get this all of the time, and we know it's eyewash. But then along come the commentators and the columnists, you know. These are the facts. And they back it up with their statistics. And we've pretty well learned to take this in stride. But they do come on with a voice of authority. And then, of course, we're all familiar with the polls and how authoritative they are, particularly the polls that were taken earlier this year that showed Jane Byrne, Mayor Jane Byrne in Chicago, way out in front. So you know how authoritative those polls are. Well, then we run into the authority coming from people in high places, in government, and in the church. Some years ago, Pope Leo XIII made the statement that the highest duty and virtue is to respect authority. Well, then Thomas Huxley observed that first of all, James Russell Lowell affirmed that he who is firmly seated in authority thinks security and not progress. And after that, Huxley affirmed that every great advance in knowledge involved the absolute rejection of authority. I'm sure he was not referring to the duly constituted authority that deals with traffic laws and your neighbor's goods, particularly your neighbor's wife, but rather the vested authority that wants to take a solid position and stay there. And of course, Sir Isaac Newton completely rejected the authority of science that preceded him, the ideas about force and motion. And with the principles and laws that he discovered, he established authority for the thoughts about force and motion that ruled the scientific community for some 250 years. And they're still valid in some areas. All of our space shots, space shuttle and voyages to the moon and so forth, relied to a great extent on Newtonian physics. But Einstein wasn't overly impressed with Newton's authority, and thus he had the freedom to go beyond it. Then now there are those who are not too impressed with Einstein's authority, even though there is a great deal that is valid, and they've gone beyond Einstein in many areas. Reflecting what Emerson said, that the new position of the advancing man has all of the powers of the old, and yet has them all new. And that no truth is so sublime but what it may be trivial in the light of tomorrow's new thought. And the people wish to be settled, but only insofar as they are unsettled is there any hope for them. So this business of the voice of authority is one we really need to consider. Where is our authority coming from? Where is the valid authority upon which we can rely? Where's the authority for religious science? Well, the authority for the Religious Science International and the bylaws and policies that govern the organization come from you. They're established by the Congress here that we hold every year. And then administered by the Board of Directors and the President. But this is not the authority for the principles of religious science. Now, one thing for sure, we do not get our authority for this from Rome. Nor from Boston. Nor from Lee's Summit. Or Los Angeles. Or even San Diego. Some think that we get our authority from this. The Bible. Nope. And others think that our authority comes from the Science of Mind by Dr. Ernest Holmes. Not so. And Dr. Holmes, if he were here, would be the first one to say so. He said, if you take this with authority or this with authority, you're missing the boat. Because the authority in your life is vested in you. And the value of these marvelous books is not in what they say and who said it, but in how you, the reader, responds to what is said. What does this statement mean to me? Not what did it mean to Dr. Holmes? What does this statement mean to me? And you've all had the experience of reading a passage in here or in the Science of Mind, and the light turned on. There was an inner response. It says, yes, this is true. And at that point, the truth was your authority, no longer anyone else's. You knew, and you knew you knew. And some have had the experience, you know, of when they read about Esau selling his birthright for a mess of pottage. I think most of us can recognize that somewhere along the line a similar experience when we sold ourselves short for some temporary gain. This is when authority begins to come alive in our consciousness. And we recognize that the truths in these and other great books. But we also recognize that, for example, what Jesus said was not true because Jesus said it. Jesus said it because he had recognized the truth in it. And the same with Ernest Holmes. And it only becomes true and authoritative for you and for me when there is this inner response that says, yeah, that's right. And we identify with it. This is the true meaning of education, which means not a cramming in of facts, but a drawing out. The very word comes from educere, to lead out. And so when an element of truth is awakened in my consciousness, then that truth becomes authority for me. But it's so tremendously important for all of us to realize increasingly that the voice of authority does not come from the outside, but from the inside. And that all authority in my life is vested in me. But this is a scary proposition because it means that I have to take responsibility for this authority. And it means that I have to accept total responsibility for my life and my experience. Now, when we get inside, we find out that there are really two voices of authority within us. There is the one that that has begun to really recognize the truth. That in me that has begun to recognize the truth of my being. Who and what I am, that I'm immersed in an infinite presence, that I am one with the great mind, the mind that is common to all, but it is centered in me. I'm clear on this intellectually, and I'm clear intellectually that there is a power, a creative power, that is always responsible for me, to me. And that because of this creative power, my consciousness is always reflecting as my experience. And therefore I have to take full responsibility for my experience. And I'm clear on this intellectually. But there is another level of authority in me that is not so sure that this is a good idea. There is a level of authority in me that says, yes, but. I think most of us are familiar with this. But a simple example is reflected in Dave, who came to me not too long ago to talk about this new idea he had for a business. And everything seemed to be in place and ready to go, except for money. Well, it looked like a great idea to me, and obviously there was a need for it. And I said to Dave, Dave was looking for investments, of course. And I said, Dave, it seems to me that you should be able to get a loan for this. Oh, no, oh, no. Dad said, never borrow money. That was a voice of authority speaking to him. He had never really stopped to ask why and under what conditions it might be valid to borrow money and under what conditions it wouldn't be. That was the voice of authority from his past. And I think we're all familiar with these voices of authority that continue to play as tape recordings in our consciousness. The authority of the all of the conditioned responses, that's all that we learned while we were growing up before we had the capacity to exercise judgment and evaluation as to whether what we were getting fed was true or not. Many of the things that we incorporated in our consciousness, or that were incorporated in our consciousness just by osmosis, were valid. And many of them weren't. Our parents did the best they knew, but they weren't all wise as we thought they were. They did the best they knew, and it's wonderful. And in our looking at what we learned and the way we were conditioned, there's no blame or even judgment as far as our parents are concerned, because it's up to us now, not to them. There was a woman who'd been married for a couple of 3 years. Getting along fine. Her husband was very fond of ham. So, once a week, she'd bake a ham. And she'd always have the butcher cut it in half. Well, husband didn't think anything of it for a while, and finally one night he said to honey, why do you always cut the ham in half before you bake it? Your ham's delicious, I just love it, but I'm curious. She said, well, I don't really know. The mother always did. So the next day, being curious, she called her mother on the phone and said, Mom, why did you always cut the ham in half before you baked it? There was a silence at the other end of the line. And finally, mother said, I don't really know. But mother always did. So the next time that she had an opportunity to talk with her grandmother, this young woman said, Grandma, why did you always cut the ham in two before you baked it? Grandma said, well, very simple. I never had a roaster big enough for a whole ham. Now, all of us have a whole reservoir of subjectified beliefs. You've heard the other speakers refer to this as the belief systems, and we all have these belief systems. And part of the elements in the belief system are valid. Part of the beliefs are not. Some of them are more or less inconsequential, like this business with cutting the ham in two, that it didn't interfere with anything, and apparently it didn't affect the quality and taste and so forth. But there are some of these beliefs that that are self-defeating, that are so against the truth that that they cause us trouble and they cause us conflict. And so we experience, and I'm talking primarily personally, I'm not talking about you. You have to identify this with this as you will, or as you won't, as the case may be. That's up to you. But we're involved, I'm involved with two levels of authority in my consciousness. That level where intellectually I recognize the truth of being, my complete responsibility for my experience, that I am the only thinker in my mind, and therefore I am the only creator in my world. And as I said, intellectually, I'm completely clear on this. But then there is the other level of authority that says, yes, but you can't be. Look at the conditions out here, the economic conditions. You can't change those. And so on with the other arguments, all of the yes buts. I'll make a statement, yes, I'm in... I am perfect and complete and total health right now. Oh, yes, but look at the way your ankle feels. Well, as long as this conflict is going on in me, then it's going to reflect to some degree as conflict in my relationships. You notice that the topic for this morning is has to do with personal relationships. Well, I'm convinced that only to the degree that I am in harmony with myself, these two levels of my being, can I really be in harmony with someone else. And I can share with you that I know this to be true for me, because while I have been growing up over these last 31 years, and I'm still growing up, believe me, and plan to continue it, while I've been growing up over these last 31 years, I have been more and more resolving the conflict between these two levels of authority. And I have found that my interpersonal relationships have continued to improve. So I can speak with the voice of authority for me that personal relationships improve as the relationships on the inside of me improve. Now, one of the prime purposes of religious science, as I see it, is to help us resolve this inner conflict. In other words, to replace the beliefs in our consciousness that are not valid, that are not in tune and in harmony with life, with the truth that is life and therefore in harmony with life. And we all have this. One of the stories that I identify with so much, one you're all familiar with, the father that came to Jesus with the epileptic son, who'd been throwing himself in the fire and cutting himself and all of that sort of thing, having fits. And the father asked Jesus to heal him. And Jesus said, well, do you believe that I can heal the boy? And the father said, yes, I believe, but help thou mine unbelief. And so with part of us, we believe, and there's part of us that doesn't believe. From the old conditioning. Now, the technique that I have found helpful to me in working on the resolution of this conflict of inner authority is to actually think of this conditioned part of my consciousness that got conditioned when I was a boy as my little boy. Now, those of you who've been with me in the inner child workshop know that my little boy's name is Carty, which is what they called me when I was growing up. I guess I got the name because when I was little, I couldn't say Carlton. The best I could do was Carty. So I actually think of myself as two personalities. In other words, I have consciously made myself a schizo. Now, you see, it's all right to be a schizo as long as you're aware of it. The trouble comes in with the ones who are schizos and not aware of it. And, of course, Karen Horn and I said we're all neurotic, and it's perfectly all right to be neurotic as long as we're aware of it. It's when we're neurotic and not aware of it that it causes trouble. So I am, I consciously recognize my split personality. There's Carlton, the adult, that sees reasonably clearly and objectively. You can see the absolute validity of these religious science principles, principle of mind, principle of life, principle of creative power, principle of the law through which it works. Carlton has no problem with this. He's clear on it. But Carty is not so sure that this is a safe way to go. This gets pretty scary sometimes. But by recognizing that when I feel scared, it's not Carlton that's scared. It's not the adult, because Carlton knows there's nothing out here to be afraid of. But it's okay for Carter to be scared. And I get clear away from the old statements, which I used to use all the time. Well, with all of the studying you've done in religious science, you shouldn't be afraid. And after all, you're standing up there telling people how to think. You shouldn't be afraid. Well, hell, I felt afraid. So it's okay. And I still get scared sometimes. But I'm recognizing, you see, Carty, it's okay. And instead of putting Carty down and belittling, and one of the real troubles that many religious scientists have is self-belittlement. I should be doing better. I should be demonstrating better with all of the stuff. After all, I have taken the classes. I should be demonstrating. I should be beyond that. Well, I'm not beyond it. I'm where I am. But you see, recognizing that it's Carty that gets worried, it's Carty that gets scared, it's Carty that feels rejected at times, I can say, hey, it's okay. I can come on as an adult and say, hey, it's okay, just as I would with a little boy. And it gets clear away from the shoulds and the self-put-downs and all of the rest. And I'll tell you something. Carty and I are getting along better and better and better all the time. A few years ago, yeah. I really feel any self-judgment anymore. But see, there's still some of these conditioned responses inside. When I feel rejection, which I do on occasion, Carlton is clear that all rejection at the grown-up level is self-rejection. But Carty doesn't know this. Carty's still confused that if one of his ideas is rejected, He's rejected. Well, see, Carl knows better. Carl knows that somebody that just doesn't agree with one of his ideas. And that's okay. But the feeling is that if somebody doesn't agree with my ideas, I'm rejected. And there's no truth in that. And I know there's truth at one level, but now I have to get it across to Carly. Hey, you're not rejected. You're okay. You're a pretty good kid. You know? And gradually, there is an increasing sense of harmony and unanimity in my consciousness. Oh, it's not complete yet, and that's okay. I don't mind. But it doesn't throw me like it used to. I can accept it with, just yesterday at one point, I lost my cool. I have a couple of three times this weekend. But it doesn't last long, and I don't put myself down for it. I don't clobber myself like I used to and say, Jesus, here you are 31 years along in this, and you still feel that way, you know? Well, nuts. What can I do about it? How can I handle it? Okay. And increasingly, as this inner conflict is resolved, between these two levels of authority, which we all have, the more harmonious is our relationship with others. Because I recognize that everyone else I meet has this same fundamental problem with the adult and the child. And it's okay. And of course, this gives tremendous insight into a marriage when you realize that they're not just two in a marriage, they're four. It does complicate the matter a little bit. But to sum up, it's just like the ocean out here. When it's whipped up on the surface with waves, the depths are calm. And so the more we recognize that even though the surface of our experience may be temporarily disturbed, there's a center of peace and power and life within us that is never disturbed. And the more we become aware of this, the more this inner security, more this inner sense of calm and peace and confidence reflects into our world, the more we can say, yes, I am a spiritual citizen of a spiritual universe. I'm not a weak human being tossed about here and there. And increasingly, as we become aware of this and take the responsibility for it, this consciousness of truth reflects in our experience. And right now, I am really delighted with the level of my consciousness of truth, because what I see, it is reflecting in my world right now. And it's wonderful. Thank you.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.